Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Yesterday we covered basically an overview of the topics that we'll be discussing, and now we're going to start going a little more slowly, a little more deeply into the subject matter, the second chapter of Canto 1 Srimad Bhagavatam, Divinity and Divine Service. So I'd like to go back a little bit, because the first verses of chapter 2, they really help to appreciate the subject matter. I mentioned that the verses in chapter 1 include appreciations by the sages of Naimisharanya of the qualifications of Sutta Goswami. So the qualifications of a speaker. So we step back and look at the picture of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam is instructing us who is qualified to speak Srimad Bhagavatam, and then who is qualified to receive it. When you have something very, 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 very special, very valuable, who can deliver that something, and who's qualified to receive it? Very important questions. In fact, in this first canto, the same thing that happens in chapter 1, chapter 2 is repeated at least 5 times throughout the first canto. It's a refrain, it's important. Who is qualified to speak? What qualifications must one cultivate? So it's presented within, for those of you that don't see anybody has a book, for it's chapter 2, text number 2. I'm going to read the translation and then we'll discuss a little bit. Before Sutta Goswami begins, he's offering his prayers or his praise and appreciation to the one who he received knowledge from. He received knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam from who? From Shukadev Goswami. So his words of praise go to Shukadev Goswami. So he says, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage, Shukadev Goswami, who can enter into the hearts of all." It's like Paramatma who enters into the hearts of all. He's so dear to the Supreme Lord, who is within the heart of all, that he can enter into the hearts of everyone. That's an amazing qualification for starters. When he went away to take up the renounced order of life sannyas, leaving home without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread or the ceremonies observed by the higher castes, his father, Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, "Oh, my son! Indeed, only the trees, which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation, echoed in response to the bereaved father." So several points. The sacred thread ceremony is awarded to a young Brahmin boy after he has completed his basic studies shown to his teacher the discipline and submission to the discipline of the teacher, and he's learned the basics of grammar and the rules for entering into study of Sanskrit texts. So he receives this reformatory gift or award, upanayana, so that he's now eligible to study the Vedas. In the case of Shukadeva Goswami, he had already attained the conclusion of the study of the Vedas. He was perfectly realized in the goal of the Vedas, in Brahman. So he didn't need to undergo the upanayana ceremony. So he just left. There's a nice discussion, more than a nice, a very important discussion in Chaitanya Charitamrita on this topic, where Lord Chaitanya is explaining that the process of chanting the holy name is so powerful that just as the holy name is independent, because Krishna is... You're right in front of the camera. You're right in front of the camera. No good. Just as Krishna is fully independent, his name being non-different than him is fully independent, and one need undergo nothing but chant the holy name. And Lord Chaitanya is specific that even the reformatory processes, the purascharya, the prior to receiving formal initiation, even initiation itself, because the holy name stands alone, is independent, one simply has to chant the holy name. Then there's a long purport, like 8 pages long, where Prabhupada is quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, where it says, it's like a yeah but. But if you're on the platform of Shukadeva Goswami, you don't need. You just chant. And if you're not on the platform of Shukadeva Goswami, you need. Because that reformatory ceremony, which is essential to the Vedas, helps one or enables one to become qualified to chant. Or the full force, the full benefit, the full mercy of Krishna through the process of chanting, the door becomes opened. From Krishna's side, nothing else is needed. From our side, something may be needed. In Shukadeva Goswami's case, nothing else was needed. So he didn't undergo. Then the mention is made, not just that there was an echo coming from the trees as Vyasadeva was calling for his son, but the trees called out, because the trees were attached, just as Vyasadeva was attached, not like an attached householder, spiritually attached. Vyasadeva wasn't on the material platform. He was fully on the spiritual platform. And he was attached to his son because of his purity. And the trees were attached to Shukadeva Goswami because of his purity. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he makes two specific references that are very nice. One is from Padma Purana, and in which it says, he who worships the Lord pleases all living entities. All moving and non-moving beings are controlled by him. They're controlled by love. It's not like a living entity controls another living entity. We know that from Bhagavad Gita. But because of the nearness and dearness to the Lord of a pure devotee, the living entities become also near and dear to him. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is Rupa Goswami's Our Nectar Devotion, is a summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When describing what's in Our Nectar Devotion, Chapter 1, the six characteristics of pure devotional service, Chapter 1, one of those is Shubha Dha, or the beginning of all Shubha, all auspiciousness. Rupa Goswami quotes this same verse from Padma Purana and establishes that what is this Shubha that becomes established, that one becomes dear to all living entities. The converse is envy and enmity between living beings is destroyed by the power of pure devotional service. So the converse, the positive, is one becomes dear. Living entities become dear to you, and you become dear to other living entities. The auspiciousness of potential loving relationships, genuine, pure, real loving relationships, becomes established by devotional service. And when devotional service becomes, that's even in the sadhana stage, and when the devotional service becomes mature, as in the case of Shukadeva Goswami, such a fully liberated platform, he has affection for the world, and the world has affection for him. So the trees were calling, as his father was calling, "Oh, my son," meaning, "Please don't go." Jiva Goswami explains this, and he says, even more, Krishna was feeling the same separation. Of course, Krishna is everywhere, but the trees were the mouthpiece for speaking Krishna's feelings. "Oh, my son," indicating, Sutta is indicating, what an elevated platform was Shukadeva Goswami on. And then he goes on to explain, why did Shukadeva Goswami come to teach this? There's a detail, a nice detail, that when Shukadeva Goswami left, Vyasadeva was wanting, not just, "Hey, my son, where'd my son go?" He was wanting to give Srimad Bhagavatam to him. The next verse is this one that we recited yesterday, Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that Naranarayan Rishi taught Srimad Bhagavatam to Narada Muni. And Narada Muni taught Srimad Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva instructed Srimad Bhagavatam not only to Shukadeva Goswami, but also to the goddess of learning, Saraswati, because this is now elevating how amazing is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And even the goddess of learning was eager to hear it. She's the goddess of learning, and she was eager to hear it. As was Shukadeva Goswami, a liberated soul. A liberated soul who didn't need anything and wasn't attracted to anything of this world. And he was attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. How elevated is this Srimad Bhagavatam? And how elevated is Shukadeva Goswami? So, Shukadeva Goswami had left. And Vyasadeva hadn't had the opportunity to instruct him in Srimad Bhagavatam. What to do? But Vyasadeva is very expert. He got together some of his most qualified disciples, instructed them in a few verses, just a few verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, and sent them into the forest. Just go through the forest reciting these verses. Somewhere you'll come across my son. And when you come across my son and he hears these verses, he'll become attracted. So he'll ask you, where did you hear these verses? Tell me more, tell me more. And you'll have to tell them the truth. These are the only verses I know. If you want to hear more, you have to come back and hear from your father. So he came back. He who has no interest in anything material was deeply attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the platform of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And why did he deliver it to others? Just out of his mercy. He had nothing to achieve. A transcendentalist has nothing. There's no fruitive thing to attain by doing whatever they do. So why would he do anything? Why would he speak the Srimad Bhagavatam? It's just out of his mercy. Therefore, I'm feeling so grateful to Shukadeva Goswami that he gave his mercy in the form of delivering the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the other part that our acharyas unpack from this verse is that Shukadeva Goswami has this capacity to enter into the hearts of all living beings because of his intimate relationship with the Lord, who is within the heart of all living beings. He's with the Lord. The Lord is there. He's within the heart also. And therefore the prayer, unspoken prayer, is may Shukadeva Goswami and his Lord, who is both of whom are within the heart, empower my capacity to speak on their behalf, in honor of them. And our acharyas describe that should be the mind, the mentality of a qualified speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. Not to learn a subject matter, master it, and then display it for whatever the purpose may be. But rather as an instrument, a humble instrument, pleading, praying, petitioning for the mercy of the one who has delivered that to the speaker, that the message become transparently presented by their will and their empowerment, by their mercy. As his mercy enabled me to receive it, may his mercy enable me to properly convey it. Qualifications of a speaker. So, the next verse is this Narayanam Namaskritya. No. Let me offer my obeisances unto him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who, out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge, after having personally assimilated it by experience. Beautiful. So what is Srimad Bhagavatam? What is it that he's going to answer the sages' questions on the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam? Because that's the best answer for anything. It's the commentary by the same author as the compiler of the cream of all the Vedas. The Vedas were compiled, Maha Muni Krite, and to, just like milk has at the top, when it comes from the cow at least, before you get to the store, as cream. So the cream of all the Vedas is Vedanta Sutra, and the Bhagavatam is the explanation, the presentation for ordinary people of this world of what's the cream of all the Vedas. And the person who presented it is this Shukadeva Goswami, who heard it from his father, Srila Vyasadeva. And what's the purpose? So this is something about the qualification of the speaker as well as the qualification of the receiver. The receiver's qualification may be, or you could say disqualification, is that they're a gross materialist. Like, what gross materialist is interested in Srimad Bhagavatam? Not very many. But there may be some who understand there must be something more than this. There's got to be something more than this. That's called adau shraddha. It's preliminary faith. I don't know what that something is, but there's got to be something more than this. For those persons who want to cross over the ocean of material existence out of this compassion for those littlest bit of faith persons, Shukadeva Goswami spoke, to carry them to the other side, to give them the means to get to the other side of material existence. So that's a qualification of the listener, is to understand the subject matter's purpose. It's not like interesting stories. It's interesting stories. It's not like, you know, very beautiful poetry. It's very beautiful poetry. It's not a brilliant exposition on so many different subject matters like matter and spirit and the controller both. It's all those things. But its purpose is to bring us to the spiritual world once again, to cross the ocean of material existence and get to the other side and be with Krishna. That's the qualification of the audience. So, indirectly, Suta Goswami is appreciating you are such qualified persons. Therefore, it's very inspiring to me to share this subject matter with you. Very intimate. Said very concisely, said very beautifully, but through the assistance of our Acharya's commentaries, they're revealing all these nice things that he's saying in very simple language. Then comes this Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, this getting on the other side of material existence, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayana, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. This, in the next verse, the phrase "Yenatma supersedati" comes. I mentioned this yesterday. We'll repeat it again. It's worth repeating. Because it's repeated again and again, it elevates its importance to something that we really should pay attention to. The goal is not selfishness, I feel good, not that kind of satisfaction, nor the satisfaction of relief from material existence. That's not the satisfaction that's wanted. The satisfaction that's wanted is restoring the relationship that we have with Krishna. And when that relationship is restored, it means, implicit is, loving relationship with Krishna is restored. The position of we're the servant and he's the master is restored. The exchange of love between the servant and the master is restored. The diseased condition is over and the healthy condition is fully restored. Our natural activities, even in this embodied state, the natural activities of the soul become restored. That's the implication. So this Srimad Bhagavatam has that capacity. And because Sutta Goswami is appreciating that the sages are asking that question which will bring that about, their questions are all auspicious. Again, this Shubhadha reference is brought in. The teaching of Rupa Goswami that devotional service, even in the sadhana stage, is awakening of all auspicious, loka mangalam. It's good for all living beings, even that we're sitting here in the temple room, and who knows what the rest of the city of Seattle is doing on a snowy Thanksgiving day. Can there be something better that we could be doing to be of service to all the living entities in the city of Seattle? Maybe we could, like, you know, Thanksgiving morning, go make a Thanksgiving something or other and distribute this Thanksgiving something or other to people, leaving out the unmentionables. And that's a nice service to do. But that service arises, the Krishna conscious purpose for such a service arises, not just the philanthropy and welfare, but the Krishna consciousness arises from what we're doing right now. There can't be anything more auspicious that we could do, at least for this portion of our day, is absorbing ourselves, not selfishly, but selflessly, for the whatever it is that we can do with the rest of our lives, to do that in Krishna consciousness, and to share genuine Krishna conscious association with others in all the little things that we do in the course of our life. The most important thing. So, Sutta Goswami is appreciating that the questions asked in chapter 1 are of such a nature. Bhavadbhir loka mangalam. And it's capable of completely satisfying the self, both the speaker and the listener, and all living entities who are involved in that process. And the phrase repeats itself like a refrain. It's mentioned in the first chapter. It's mentioned here in the second chapter several times. It's mentioned again several times in this first canto. We want to come to that position. So, that covers the first five verses of chapter 2. Then comes the sixth verse of chapter 2. The sixth verse of chapter 2 is also something that we discussed yesterday. It's the answer to the first question. So, those of you that know the verse, we can recite it together. Savai pungsam karo dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje ahaitaki apratiyata yatma suprasidati. We spoke on this yesterday, but I'll mention it again. The subject matter of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, as proclaimed in the first verse of the first canto, is Paradharma. We spent some time yesterday discussing what's that, and how is Paradharma distinct from other types of dharmas. leaving aside the so-called dharmas that are created by people, like the laws that people may say, you know, well, let's get together and make some laws, and, you know, that it means nothing. Laws created by the state and dharmas created by God. So of those things that are created by God, even Krishna says, sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. That's paradharma. Mam ekam sharanam is paradharma. It's exclusive in the language of Rupa Goswami. Love is exclusive, which sounds maybe, you know, not Hindu. You got to be accommodating. You got to love everyone and accept everything and embrace everyone and yada, yada, yada. But the good news is, love is exclusive, and because Krishna is the source of everything, love for Krishna means love for everything. At least in terms of its relation with Krishna. We don't love bad behavior, but there can't be bad behavior unless Krishna sanctions that bad behavior. So someone, anyway, love is exclusive, and the Bhagavatam is teaching that. This paradharma is full attention, full focus, full shelter, full surrender, exclusively upon Krishna. And then seeing the other living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels, and thus corresponding in a fitting situation to their circumstance, feeling and then conveying, communicating, expressing love for those living entities. That's like Prabhupada describes the Pandita Samadarshana verse of Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastani, Shuni Chaiva Sopakecha, Pandita Samadarshana. The learned pundit sees equally all living entities. So Prabhupada explains, supposing the learned pundit sees a tiger, he doesn't go and embrace the tiger, because, you know, he behaves in a different way to the tiger than he does to the Brahmin. He's respecting that there's difference, but in the core of his heart there's this equal vision. The real living being is not the tiger body or the Brahmin body or the elephant body or the dog or the dog eater's body, but his spirit soul. And same, we're as Krishna conscious entities, beings, we certainly differentiate ways in which we, at least as Madhyama Adhikaris, ways in which we relate with people appropriate for the person. For what end? Or towards what end? To help them connect with Krishna. We're little agents, little instruments of Krishna, emissaries of Krishna, to connect whoever to Krishna. That's our service to them. That's our relationship with Krishna. So we make distinctions and differentiate, but the essence is also not forgotten at any moment for one who's Krishna conscious. And that's paradharma. It applies, in other words, to all varieties of activity of life. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the Canto 6, Chapter 3 verse. This is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. Etavan eva lokesmin pungsang dharma parasmitaha bhakti yogo bhagavati tannama grahanadibhihi. You've heard that verse before. The process of paradharma mentioned right within the verse, the process of paradharma is the only means. Now we're being exclusive again. Oh, these religious people, they always say, I have the only way. And they all say the same thing. So, you know, frustration. I don't care for any of it. This isn't a sectarian view. This is a principle-centered view. whatever the ism that goes along with it, paradharma, exclusive shelter in the personality and Godhead, is the only means for attainment to the final perfection of life. Therefore, persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord engage in intensive practice of devotional service. So this mind fixed upon Krishna and engaging in our prescribed duties in service to Krishna. Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that's not a sectarian message. That's a paradharma message. That's the presentation of this, the question, go back, the question asked by the sages in text 9 is, what's the essence of what scripture is trying to convey to us? What's the ultimate and all-around good for all living beings? What's the essence? And this Savai Pung Sang Paro Dharmo verse is that essence. Something that everybody wants. George Harrison wrote it this way in the introduction or foreword to Krishna books. Everyone desires to love, and everyone desires to be loved. We just don't know where to repose that propensity. So this verse is expressing something similar. Everyone desires intimacy, love. We desire that. But we're, by mistake, reposing that desire or propensity on bodies or minds or intellects or other objects that don't satisfy us and don't satisfy the other person. And we call that, you know, life. So we just keep, you know, rearranging. Life is an endless shuffle of try it this way, try it that way. I heard somebody got a good result from this thing and that thing, and round and around and around and around we go, never finding real satisfaction. During the, anyway, you can't get no satisfaction. Very popular song that people resonated with the message, besides, you know, the popularity of the singer of the message. But people can relate. I can't find satisfaction. The real satisfaction is in this paradharma, and there isn't an alternative. But when one does place that desire for intimacy in our relationship with Krishna, we find the right kind of intimacy in our relationships with others on the spiritual platform, without the necessity of the grosser forms or even the subtler material forms of exchange, simply on the spiritual platform, because it's truly satisfying to the soul, to the self. Atma supersedeti. I'm going to read a little bit from Prabhupada's purport, because we spent some time in the question answer session yesterday about the meaning of ahaituki. So here's what Prabhupada says. The word ahaituki means, quote, without reason. Literally, hetu means cause. So this sense of reason has a causal import but without reason. A pure devotee does not render loving service to the personality of Godhead for any cause or for any benefit, material or spiritual. This is the first symptom of unalloyed devotion. And then he quotes Rupa Goswami, Anyavilashatushunyam. He has no desire to fulfill by rendering devotional service. Such devotional service is meant for the Purushottama, the Supreme Personality, and not for anyone else. This is the exclusive. A pure devotee must engage in the service of the Lord 24 hours a day without cessation. You can sleep for Krishna too, it's okay. His life is so molded that at every minute and every second he engages in some sort of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And again, a little later, the devotee has no interest but to fulfill the transcendental desire of the Supreme Lord. Such spontaneous service unto the Supreme Lord is transcendental and is never contaminated by the material modes of nature. These are the symptoms of paradharma, pure devotional service, which is free from the contamination of material nature. So that's the first question being answered. What's the essence, the best, all around good for all living beings? That's the best. There isn't something better than that. There are degrees of intimacy and intensity, but that's the platform, pure devotional service or paradharma. Very clear, very concisely and eloquently expressed. So now comes the second question of the sages. And there's a consonant that's missing. It should be bhuri. Bhurini, bhuri karmani. Shrotavyani vibhagushaha atak sadho ta yat saram samudhritya manishaya bhuri bhadraya bhutanam yenatma supersedati. There it is again. Yenatma supersedati. That's the question. There are many varieties of scriptures. And in all of them, there are many prescribed duties which can be learned. Only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select of all these scriptures, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction, their hearts may be fully satisfied. So, the previous verse, as expressed yesterday evening, the perils of Kali Yuga are shortlisted. Mandak sumanda matayo manda bhagya hupadrita prayinal payushakshavya kalamasman yugajana. This age of Kali is bad, and varieties of bad. So people aren't going to go through all the scriptures and get the essence of what all the scriptures say. They're lazy. But supposing you find somebody that has a little interest, then they start looking around and they'll be misguided. And as a result, they're lazy and misguided. They're always disturbed. Their lives are short. Their interest in well-being of themselves and others is depleted, and they're always quarreling with each other. It's not going to happen. Make it easy, please. You know the essence. Give the essence, the scriptural essence. Beautiful question. So here's a artistic rendering of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Well, there's the Vedas, and there's the different parts of all the Vedas in the tree of Vedic knowledge. And what the sages are saying is the scriptures are innumerable, and the methods and prescribed duties within those scriptures are innumerable. And in this age of Kali, to follow the path of ascertaining or discerning the essence of the Vedas through the Varnashram system, it's not going to be possible. What are we to do? What's the simple, easy way of attaining this goal? What's the method and the essence that's achieved by that method? And again, that method, when it's achieved, is satisfying to the soul. So here's the answer given in chapter 2. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti-yoga prayojataha janiyatiyashu vairagyam jnanam chayad ahaitupam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of God in Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So one essence in this statement is, practically inferred from the question itself, is we don't need anything else. We don't need this, that, or the other thing else. We just need Paradharma. Exclusive shelter in the personality of Godhead brings to it all these other very nice, desirable things. Particularly, knowledge and detachment. These two are very much valued. Jnana and Vairagya are very much valued in the Vedic system. In the world, even people that are not Vedic, someone who is very knowledgeable, very wise. I mean, how many people in the world don't know Albert Einstein? I don't know if they know about him in some parts of the world, but what's his fame? That is beauty. His intelligence, his intellect. And so many ways to describe this. You know, how many people in the world go to universities? And what is it they're hoping to get from the university? To associate with somebody that has knowledge. How much is knowledge revered? How many books and so on and so on? It's revered. And it's attained without separate endeavor. Just by Paradharma, by devotional service. Causelessly. We don't need something else. The process is exclusive, and the object is exclusive. And by, although it's exclusive, it's inclusive. But you don't need something else. And our acharyas comment that this jnanam that's referred to here is not the knowledge by which you can get a job. It's not the knowledge by which you can become detached from the body. It's not the knowledge by which you can attain liberation. But it's specific. It's the knowledge of the sweetness of Krishna, through which all those other things, all the requirements of the living being can be best achieved. Combine this knowledge with any other activity of life and you'll have the fulfillment or perfection of life. And it leads to attachment to Krishna. So it works both ways. By Jiva Goswami describes that when even a little bit of bhakti awakens in the heart, a little bit, then there's an increased desire to engage in the activities of bhakti, to hear more, to chant more, to read more, to serve more, because, and all those things enrich bhakti. It's the nourishment that feeds the entity, the bhakti itself. And as that happens, then naturally the unwanted things are removed and the wanted things are brought into place. The detachment and the knowledge come about. Jiva Goswami refers to this well-known verse from the 11th canto, Bhakti Parishano Bhavo Viraktir Anyatra Cha. You've heard that so many times. So there are three things that arise when one has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what Paradharma is. One who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotion begins to awaken and awakens further, progressively more and more. Para-isha anubhav, direct experience of the Supreme Lord. Not like somebody has to tell you. Like the example that's given when you're eating, someone doesn't have to tell you, now you have had enough. You can tell them, I'm feeling very full, thank you, I don't need anything more. And viraktir anyatra cha, detachment from other things. These other processes, the other attainments from the other processes. For a devotee who is full, or as one becomes full, the interest in those other things fades. Gone. There's an increasing interest in hearing and chanting, remembering, praying, worshipping, serving, nurturing that bhakti spirit and experience of the Lord carries one further and further and further. It's realization or palpable. Another verse that Jiva Goswami cites is a verse from the 5th canto, chapter 18, where similarly it's where these qualities become decorations of the devotee. All the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. So 6 and 7 of chapter 2 are very much connected, but there's some distinct feature of number 7 here. When one has engaged in this paradharma, these outcomes are the result. And this is the conclusion of the scripture, while there's so many prescribed things. Just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, vastly learned, like super scholar, like the scholar of, he had thousands of disciples, sannyasi disciples and many other disciples. Mega scholar. In the association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and presented to Lord Chaitanya his question. One question was, there's so many things recommended in the Vedas that are good to be done. Of all those so many things, what's the most important thing? Is there one thing most important? Immediately Lord Chaitanya said, chanting of the holy name is the most important thing. Most important thing. Because this chanting of the holy name helps one accomplish these things mentioned here. Here's how Srila Prabhupada writes it. Bhakti, being the supermost occupation of the living being, leads him out of material sense enjoyment. That is the sign of a pure devotee. One who is a pure devotee has all the good qualities, namely knowledge, detachment, etc. But one who has only knowledge or detachment is not necessarily well acquainted with the principles of the bhakti cult. Therefore, bhakti is the supermost occupation of the living being. And here's one other very important word, this word ashu. Ashu is a reference of time, and it means at once. So how long have we been chanting? And how does this at once fit into that? The answer is the potency, full potency is there at once. Just like the Srimad Bhagavatam describes that these messages, when heard properly, acts just like a highly, well, Prabhupada explains, a highly potent drug injected intravenously. And it goes at once throughout the whole body. It's not like taking a pill and slowly it dissolves and goes through the body. At once it goes to the whole body, an IV medication. And this, similarly, this process of hearing, when properly heard and chanted, small thing, when properly heard and chanted, it has that full potency to act at once. So we'll go back to the qualification of speaker and qualification of receiver. We're certainly not going to question the qualification of Srila Prabhupada as the presenter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the problem isn't over there, the problem is over here. The medication is fine. The intravenous process is fine. Our receptivity isn't fine. The eagerness to cross over the ocean of material existence isn't fine. We're still holding on to stuff. And so, it's gradual. But the potency is there for it to act at once. We should know that. The Bhagavatam is telling us that the capacity is there for it to act fully. Full effects at once. So, a few more slides and we'll finish for the morning. This bhakti yoga process is the highest goal, but more than saying that it's the highest goal, ultimately it's the only goal. Ultimate only goal. There may be intermediate steps, just like steps to come up here to the temple room. But you know, once you get on the last step, it's a big step. It's the whole temple room. The whole floor. So the other are means to help one achieve what is really the only goal. And what does the practice yield? What's its fruit? Satisfaction to the soul, knowledge and detachment. One is gently taken out of material sense enjoyment by this very natural process. And as far as the satisfaction of the soul is concerned, not only the individual soul but all souls can be satisfied, because it's nourishing the root of all souls. It's bringing root water to the root of the tree, and so all the persons with whom we're in contact, and just as I mentioned, all the persons who we're not in contact with or potentially might this kind of bump into by circumstance, by divine arrangement, somehow we bump into somebody. I'll share this little something with you. When I was recently in India, as Nandasutta went to India to attend that GBC meeting, I did a few other things, and after the meeting, and the course of my travel took me from a non-stop flight from Hong Kong to Chicago. It was a long flight. It went, I think, something like 15 and a half, 16 hours non-stop. There's a flight that goes Chicago to Delhi. It's shorter. Hong Kong to Chicago is longer. And towards the end of the flight, the stewardess came by. Because I had been in a part of the world that you can't enter or leave in devotional clothes. So I was just like dressed like everybody else. And because I had been in mainland China, I had hair. So she didn't know that I was a devotee by looking at me. I was just like a passenger. Twice she came by and she said, I don't know who you are, but you're really devoted to something. And, you know, she said, I came by, you know, when it was meal service, and it's no thank you. Okay. And, you know, you have a special diet, that's fine. Just like, you know, it was carrying on like this as she was going around collecting the garbage or something. And said, and then, you know, it's such a long flight. All the stewardesses, we took a nap. I got up after my nap, and you're still there doing your thing. And we came by, you know, the beverage service, and you're still doing your thing. So I said, I don't know what it is that you're dedicated to, but you're really devoted to it. And I looked at her and said, it's not what, it's who. And she smiled ear to ear. She said, oh. But she couldn't resist. She came by and said it again. She said, I'm sharing with the stewardesses, you know, there's a person on our plane. I don't know who he is. And they said, yeah, I've noticed too. And they said, so it's even if you're just serving Krishna and people don't know who you're serving or what you're doing, there's something about that that impacts people's lives. I'll share another, I guess it's okay to do this. There's a devotee that I know that this summer had cancer surgery. You know, young enough, energetic enough to, you know, hoping for a long life, and he found out that he had cancer. Like a lot of people are finding out they have cancer these days, as far as I can see. And, but you know, he was just, I accept it as Krishna's arrangement, and I'm going to make all the necessary steps, and on the other side, whatever Krishna wants to do, it's okay. But I'm going to try to serve Krishna to the best of my ability. And his wife was, right there with him. We're very Krishna conscious. And then the surgery happened, and it went okay, and then there were complications, and, you know, fast forward now to the, you know, November time, and he's not feeling that same determination. He's feeling, he said it's partly the medication, but I'm on this emotional roller coaster that, you know, sometimes, then he was sharing what he was feeling at the time. You know, without the details, he's debilitated to a degree that it's just, and the pain, and I can't serve, and I can't do anything, and it hurts, and I have no idea when it's going to be any different, and it was all these down emotions. So I said, I know you, and I know what enlivens you. And what enlivens you is service, and you're frustrated because you can't do any service. Besides the pain, you can't do anything. And he was crying. You know, my wife, she says, I'm just a vegetable. And she just has to, like, that's all she does all day long is take care of a vegetable called her husband. It's very difficult to be in that position. She wasn't feeling like that, but he was feeling like that. So I shared with him Jaipataka Maharaj's example. You know, here's a person who is like, you know, 10 persons in one person. The energy of, and same thing, you know, he's now, he can't move without being assisted. He can't pass without being assisted. He can't eat without being assisted. He can't talk without being assisted. But he's not feeling like this. He's a servant. And he was at our meetings. right on time, being brought in his wheelchair. 15 minutes to get out of the wheelchair and sit in this machine with three people helping him, you know, doing it. But once he's on that machine, it's a machine that he's learning how to use his coordination muscles again. You know, his the hands go like this on the machine and the legs go like this. So he's like coordinating. He's got these dials on the board, so how many calories he's using. And he sat right behind me for like days, sitting on this machine, and I just was so moved, you know, with a certain number of calories. So someone comes along and puts a straw in his mouth, which he can't open, so he has to help him open his mouth, put the straw in his mouth, and he can sip something so he doesn't reduce his calories and his, you know, fluid intake, and, you know, and raises his hand to take part in the discussion with everybody, because he's a servant. He's not going to be held down by the circumstance. He's going to get on the others, and whatever it takes. So our circumstance may be so reduced of ability to serve. What can you do? But I said that the example that he's setting is such an inspiration. And you can do the same thing from this bed where you're sitting. You have that same spirit. Give yourself, here's a goal. Become able to walk unassisted. Do that for Krishna so that you can serve in other capacities or you can walk. But you do that with determination. Whatever Krishna wants to do, Krishna can do. It's like Mother Jasoda binding Krishna. You be Mother Jasoda that wants to serve Krishna in a particular way. Learn to walk again. How humiliating. Here you're this grown-up adult and you have to learn how to walk again. Learn how to walk again, unassisted, with determination, so that you can be of service. And just from your bed, you'll be serving the Vaishnavas. They'll know that, because they care about you. And you'll be able to serve them and be inspired. You probably have had something like that happen here, where someone was in a going before gone situation, and when their consciousness is so fixed, what an inspiration. It's happened. There are books written about such devotees, how powerful their determination becomes with no facility, no capacity. It happened not so long ago in Houston, this one disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, young, energetic, capable, got cancer. And, you know, going. But people were coming and, you know, like, receiving instruction from her on how to chant, how to fix the mind on Krishna. They became so inspired. Although, physically, she wasn't able to do anything. Spiritually, she was a powerhouse. Inspiring the minds and the hearts and the lives of so many devotees. So, there's no voice. There's no material requirement, a haituki, to make devotional service happen. And there's no material obstacle that can check it. Like the example given in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. No, excuse me, the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where Kapila Deva is describing Paradharma. It's like the Ganges flowing. Who can stop it? And similarly, when one is situated on that platform, the mind just goes to Krishna. You don't have to like try to get your mind to pay attention. That's what we're doing. We're doing sadhana. But when that stage is becomes elevated, that's the attainment. The mind just goes to Krishna. And one feels fully satisfied. Whatever the circumstances are that Krishna puts you in. And the circumstances can change. It can go up and it can go down. It can go sideways. And it's okay, because you can serve Krishna in any circumstance. when I left, this devotee was, I'm seeing a whole different world now. Maharaj, I'm going to do it. At least from my side, I'm going to make all effort and be very determined to remain in the position of service to Krishna. And the soul will become completely satisfied in that circumstance. And whatever facility does come, let that be used exclusively in Krishna's service. We're going to be coming to those verses shortly. Okay. I've passed my allotted time, but we'll stop here and see if there's some comments or questions. Yes?
How to come from the selfish state of devotional service to the selfless state?
By associating with those that are selfless and imbibing their qualities through association. Just like, you know, these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam are providing us with those means. Read Srimad Bhagavatam with an eagerness of attaining what you just described. Put your, you know, I want to get on the other side of selfishness cap on, and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And discuss it in the association of devotees. That's the how-to. And keep doing it. Even if it doesn't happen right away, keep doing it. It's like a seed that has a hard shell. Moisten it. Oh, the shell's still hard. Okay, keep moistening it. Expose it to the sunlight and keep moistening it. Just keep doing it. Yeah, but it's not happening. Keep doing it. And slowly the shell will moisten because the life inside will start to grow. And the life inside will burst open that shell. However hard our hearts may be, however stubborn and stuck we may be, the process is effective. There's life inside. Krishna, love for Krishna is inside. Life is inside. Real life. The real thing. The nurturing process. Apply it and stay with it sincerely. The real thing will grow and the coverings will be cast to the side. Yes?
What is the softness of heart and how do we measure
it? He's going to give you a microphone. Look at that microphone. Ooh.
What is softness of heart? How do we measure
it? What is it and what's the second part? How do we measure how much we have?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Something like that. Nice question. Well, one way to think of what softness of heart is to look at the opposite, what it isn't. What's hard-heartedness? Hard-hearted is nothing goes inside. Just before coming to Seattle, I was discussing daksha. Daksha part one and daksha part two. Because Daksha Part 1 appeared during Swayambhuva Manu's time. Daksha Part 2, one presentation given by our acharyas, says he appeared during the Chakshusha Manu. But in any case, he appeared later. And he even saw Lord Vishnu. Vishnu was pleased. Vishnu said, I've come because you simply want to serve me. But I know that you have material desire. So it's not just simply want to serve me. It's mixed. But come. Because you please me. The Lord didn't take away his material desire because he didn't want to let go of his material desire. He gave him the means to fulfill his material desire, which may happen. That's the hard-hearted. And it doesn't come in. And soft-hearted is it comes in. Now that which those agents of mercy wish to give us, we can, it goes in. That's soft-hearted. For Dhruva, it went in. And he overcame his, you know, his thing. As I want a kingdom thing, and I want to get back at my stepmother thing. And I want to get back at my father for not checking my stepmother thing. He got over it. Completely. Because it was soft-hearted. And soft-hearted, and it's a measure of that, or a standard of it is, that which the mercy givers wish to give us, we can receive it. One of the ways, or symptoms, both, that grows soft-heartedness is gratitude. Not just the please and thank you kind, but feelings of gratitude, like considering carefully what is it that I'm being given.
The way you would want to be treated.
Huh?
Something the way you would want to be treated.
Well, you know, even we don't know what we would want. I mean, let's say I'm a conditioned soul, and I would want to be treated where everyone is nice to me. You know, I determine what's nice. That's how I want to be treated. But I may not even understand what nice is. The golden rule has its place. I'm speaking something above that.
Everybody has a conscience.
Everyone has a conscience. But let's say Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva. And they insulted Narada. Stood drunk and naked before the sadhu Narada. How offensive. Narada didn't take offense. You know, how I would want to be treated. I hear what you're saying. Please try to hear what I'm saying. The golden rule is what you just said. And all religion teaches it. I'm saying something above that. Please try to hear what I'm saying. Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva didn't get what they want, the way that they wanted to be treated. They got something that took them to a much better place than the way that they would want to be treated. They became pure devotees. But to get to the position of pure devotion, by the real deep love that and compassion that Narada had, he understood they had to undergo something to become pure devotees first. They had to be deprived of their pride. And they're proud of their position and their wealth. So they need to be deprived of that for a long period of time, so long that they're no longer holding on to that object, which is the source of their pride. It's gone. Completely gone. So that's above treating others as you would want others to treat you, or wishing that others would treat you the way that you would want to treat them, or something like that. It's in another platform. The Paradharma is on another platform. And Krishna does that too. Take Mother Jasoda. Krishna wasn't letting her bind him. He wasn't letting him bind her, letting her bind him. It was all a lila. But he wasn't letting her. She got so much rope. It's not just another piece of rope. According to Jiva Goswami, she requested all the gopis who are, because she's the wife of the king of Braja, Nanda Maharaj, bring all the ropes from all of your storerooms, please bring them here. I want to bind Krishna. And she tied all those ropes together and it still wouldn't go around Krishna. So Krishna wasn't treating her the way that she might want to be treated. He was doing something else. He was intensifying her love for him. And showing what glorious, to the world, what glorious love is the love of Mother Jasoda. It was beyond the point of I have to discipline my son. Or I've got, you know, I'm attached to doing this. He's little, I'm big, I'm gonna bind him. It was her love. Krishna was bound by her love. So I don't want to hear it one more time. There's place for us, I'll support what you're saying in the following way. There's place for us to treat others in ways that we would want others to treat us. That's a religious principle. This is a transcendental principle above that religious principle that I'm speaking about. That's paradharma. The Krishna may do with us what he likes. That's Lord Chaitanya's teaching. He can embrace me. He can leave me brokenhearted, abandon me completely. He can trample me with his feet. He can do whatever he likes. I only want one thing. To be engaged in his service. When Krishna sees that, he may do with us whatever he likes. He may not allow us to bind him. He may allow us to bind him. He may curse us to become trees. He may liberate us. He can do with us whatever he likes. And that's not, you know, we're not fazed. Narayana paraksarge na kutashchana bibhuti svarga. Heaven. Apavarga, liberation. Narakeshu, hell. Krishna, you can do with me whatever you like. Apitu yarta darshanam. Such a person sees these things equally. Because that's not happiness. Happiness is one thing. Being engaged in service to the Supreme Lord. That's extreme, those various options. But that's the standard of pure devotional service. So it's not like I want Krishna to treat me the way that I would want to be treated, or I want other people to treat me the way, right? It's above the standard of religion. It's transcendental life. That's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. We need to live by, certainly, go there again. We need to live by the principle of treating others in ways that we would want others to treat us. But our understanding of how others should be treated may be less than transcendental. Higher is to want to receive from Krishna and those very dear to Krishna whatever they understand is best for us. So the question, going back to the original question, was, what does it mean to be soft-hearted? To accept what those who are our true well-wishers want for us and receive it. That's soft-hearted. And when you receive it, you feel gratitude. And when you feel gratitude, you do something. An action of loving expression in that relationship with that person and those things that that person would wish to see. You become an instrument of the will of that loving person. Your life just becomes dedicated to that. Your whole identity changes from I want to, I'm the servant of what this loving person wants. I'm happy in that position. I don't need anything else. That's soft-hearted.
While doing the work, we hear has to be done in devotional service. As we do,
don't stand in front of the camera. Hey.
Even as we do the activities that we are supposed to do, which is being told by the acharyas or by the Christian master, there is always a tendency as we hear to get hard-hearted. So apparently you're saying the
same message as I gave to Sundar. Just keep moving. Keep the nurturing the bhakti creeper. The bungee cord phenomena will happen. So, you know, we go back to where we were, hard-hearted. Keep moving. Cultivate, in another phrase. Anushilana, in Rupa Goswami's language. Follow the example of the perfected souls. Keep doing that. Just keep doing that. Exercise your bhakti muscle. Little. Just keep exercising the bhakti muscle. Just keep doing it. It becomes a strong muscle. Natural. Yes?
So, Maharaj, in the beginning of the class, you were saying that.
Maharaj, in the beginning of the class, you were saying that from Lord Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's point of view, one need not undergo any reformatory process, but just chant the holy name as it was applicable to Sukadeva Goswami. But as for others,
it's imperative. That's the conclusion of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada's commentary on that verse. It may sound like, hey, he's contradicting Lord Chaitanya. Tisk tisk, shame shame, can't do that. He's just clarifying. It doesn't reduce the supremacy and total independence of Krishna's holy name. It doesn't reduce that at all. But it's a description of what we need to do in order to access that full potency. You know, back, whoops, to this word ashu, at once. Because the potency is there. We're not receiving properly. We have to, like, you know, refine our receivers, our receiving capacity. And this is part of how we do that. Okay? Yes, in the back.
So you spoke about like the bhakti process, like there were three points, like devotion, direct experience of God, and detachment from other processes.
Or any other thing.
Any other thing. So I understand the first and the third. So how does the direct experience of God, how does it really, how do you know when you have it, or how do you know you don't have it? Or
well, you look at the other two. I'm serious. Is my desire for hearing and chanting genuinely increasing? Is my detachment for all of the things decreasing? If the answer is no in either of those columns, then you can take it that your experience is something else. Not genuine, or hallucination, or something, imagined, or wishful thinking, but not there yet. Okay? You're looking very thoughtful. Is it okay?
So those two, I guess you can say yes or no, when do you know that, you know, direct experience of God, how does it really, does it mean that you have God, you feel like God is telling you to do something?
No, that's not it. That's not it. You feel safe. You feel shelter. You feel protection. You may not be really clear, you know, turn left or turn right, but you feel safe. It's, you know, like a child with their mother. You don't have to tell the child, now you feel safe. Repeat after me. I feel safe. They feel safe. It's a feeling. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.